From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. Juneau Public Libraries hosted its first Youth Pride Poetry Contest this month. Some of Juneau's youngest poets showed up at the Mendenhall Library this week to celebrate Pride with their words. 14-year-old Ocean Traver won second place in the contest, which was open to budding poets between ages 9 and 18. Traver says poetry is her way of communicating her truths when it's hard to just talk about them openly.
People who don't have a voice or can't speak out have a way of speaking out and telling their story.
The poem she read, Protect the Kids, chronicles her experience of understanding her bisexuality, ending with a question she's grappled with.
As I sit here today and tell my story, I must ask the question, if we are all God's children, why would he make some of us sinners?
Maria DeMaio, the library's outreach coordinator, says poetry is a vital way that LGBTQ+ individuals can explore their identities.
I think it's just a different way to communicate who someone is and what an idea is. And I think that a lot of times it can really bring people together in a way that, you know, writing an essay or something wouldn't.
During the Pride poetry event, DeMaio led the young poets in making spine poems, poems made from the words on stacks of book spines. The poets also made blackout poetry, using Sharpies to deconstruct old book pages, recipes, and news stories. Harper Field, age 9, read her blackout poem aloud for the group.
Journey to America, journey to the Pacific, far from inhabited land. The polar circle was passed, the vessels had directed towards America on 31st March at 7 p.m. We only thought of the future.
Field's contest entry took first place. It's a poem about Pride's best-known symbol, rainbows.
Rainbows. Twisting, curving, swirling, a sky of colors, bright as buttercups, green as grass, beautiful, a rainbow.
Traver and Field both won gift cards to a local restaurant and books of poetry by Zeta Elliott. DeMaio says she hopes more young people will be inspired to express their pride and submit poems next June. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. A phone sat at the bottom of the Kenai River for 4 days last week until it was reeled in by an unsuspecting angler. As KDLL's Riley Board reports, the story has a happy ending.
This weekend on the Upper Kenai, one angler caught something even rarer than a king salmon.
And she snagged something, and at first we thought it was a trout because of the way it was kind of wiggling in the water, and it wasn't pulling as hard as a salmon. And I saw her just reel this like black object out of the water, and it turned out to be an iPhone.
David Finocchio of Anchorage was fishing on the Kenai River with his mom, who was visiting from the East Coast. Just as Finocchio was reeling in a salmon, his mom pulled up the cell phone, clad in a high-tech case.
The tip of her hook had just like barely snagged the lip or like the edge of the case. And so she reeled it up and we were like, wow, what are the chances of that? That's amazing. It's probably, you know, toast.
Finocchio brought the phone home to Anchorage, plugged it in, and miraculously, it came back to life. The home screen pictured a couple skiing at Alyeska Resort, so he knew it had to belong to a local. He posted on Facebook and quickly reconnected with the owner. It turned out the phone had been at the bottom of the river for 4 days. Finocchio says everything about the process feels miraculous.
I bet if there was a phone in the bottom of the river and you were like, you could see it, you'd have a really hard time hooking it, even if you were trying. And so the fact just that she got it alone was like, that was enough for us. And then, you know, to think that we'd ever be able to like return it to its owner was definitely beyond what we thought was going to be possible that day.
He says, well, it was a successful salmon fishing day for him. His mom ultimately just caught the phone. The Russian River and Upper Kenai River opened to sport fishermen a month early, and the bag limit increased last weekend, bringing an influx of anglers. The river reached its escapement goal with 2 weeks left in the early run. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Use of the opioid reversal drug naloxone is increasing in Alaska. Naloxone is safe and easy to administer, but public health professionals say it's essential to get people to the emergency room after using it. In practice, though, people often aren't calling 911. As Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports, that's concerning to public health experts.
Just going to make a little stack and a couple cases of Ultrafines, which is usually our most popular syringe.
Venus Woods is prepping to head out in a mobile needle exchange. She works for Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, or 4AAS. Every week, she takes a white Mercedes van parks it in the Mountain View neighborhood of Anchorage and waits. The van has a sliding window, and people come up to it to exchange their used syringes for new ones.
Okay. And do you need any Narcan? Okay. What about fentanyl test strips?
Needle exchanges like this reduce HIV and hepatitis transmission by 50% because people don't share needles as much. The organization also gives out safer drug use supplies like alcohol wipes, tourniquets, and Kloxxado. That's a stronger version of naloxone that can be used to reverse an opioid overdose. Wood says people tell her they're using the overdose kits.
I mostly hear things like, it's amazing, it saves people's lives, I had to use that several times last week.
According to the health department, organizations gave out about 30,000 kits statewide last year. Anyone who gets a kit in Alaska takes a short training. They learn how to use the nasal spray and that they must call 911 afterwards for medical attention. But Wood says, in practice, people aren't calling 911.
You know, I think the majority of our syringe access clients do not utilize emergency rooms.
Woods is in recovery, so also speaks from personal experience. She says people who use drugs are sometimes treated differently by doctors and in hospitals, so they might not want to get medical care. Coleman Cutchins is a clinical pharmacist for the Alaska Department of Health. He says he doesn't want people to avoid care because they fear stigma. He says people go into healthcare to save lives, and he's deeply worried that people aren't getting medical care after an overdose.
I just want to stress, you know, how unsafe it is to not call 911 as soon as one of these happen. You know, anytime somebody gets naloxone, you know, they're trying to save a life. It's wonderful, but the full part of saving that life is give naloxone, start CPR, call 911.
Cutchin says in an opioid overdose, the person forgets to breathe. A reversal drug like Narcan helps by kicking opioids off of the receptors in the brain. But Narcan doesn't last as long as opioids do. He says people should give multiple doses of naloxone while they're waiting for an ambulance, but it's still possible to overdose after getting naloxone.
So there's instances where, you know, someone seems totally fine and then, you know, an hour or so later they go back, you know, or even a few hours later they go back into that respiratory depressed state.
He says even if people survive an overdose, they could have other medical problems, like brain damage from low oxygen.
The quicker that someone can get treatment, the less likely they are to have a long-term injury from it.
Robin Lutz is executive director of 4A's. She says even if it's best practice to call 911 after an overdose, it's not realistic. One reason is that the physical experience of having an overdose reversed is extremely unpleasant.
What we hear from people is that it's a kind of immediate, what we call dope sick. So you just feel like you're in immediate withdrawal. And that's a terrible feeling. It's like the flu times 50.
People may not want to be in an ER environment after that. They may also be worried about arrest. Good Samaritan laws in Alaska protect someone overdosing or helping another person with one.
People know that, I think, on kind of an intellectual level, but I think it's really hard to believe that if you've had previous experience with the criminal justice system, you know, if you've had negative experiences, which a lot of people who use drugs have, because drug use is illegal.
But Good Samaritan laws only protect people if they stay with someone until they get medical help or the police arrive. Lutz says, however people are using it, naloxone is essential.
People really depend on it and depend on us to make sure they have it so that they can support the people they're using with, so they can support themselves. I can't imagine if our state didn't have access to naloxone right now, what our overdose deaths would look like.
She says their organization gave out 2,500 overdose kits last year. She says at times people were requesting the kits and they didn't have any left to give. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Senator Lisa Murkowski was in Lithuania and Norway last week, just as a mercenary boss launched a march on Moscow. Lithuania and Norway are NATO allies, and both are wary of Russia's aggression in the region. Murkowski says her visit has strengthened her resolve to continue U.S. aid for Ukraine's defense.
We can't get soft on our support for Ukraine. These people have demonstrated a resilience and a commitment to freedom that is unparalleled in modern times. And the United States and our allies need to be there with them.
This is KTOO.